This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD subsequent procedure subteam track 3, string contention, objections, and disputes held on Tuesday, the 27th of September, 2016. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. So if you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Karen Day. Please begin.
Thank you, Terry. Hi, everyone. This is Karen Day, and welcome to our third meeting. And I want to start off by saying this, as you know, is my first outing leading in work group, so please bear with me. Do not hesitate to speak, to correct me if I misstate something, and just to contribute in general. I note that several of us have had issues getting into the new Adobe chat room today. There's some certificate issues. And I also note that several of you are appearing in the participant list by phone number only. So if you do raise your hand and I call on you by your phone number, that is why. If you'd like to put your name in the chat, that would be fine. So to start off our meeting, does anyone have any updates to their SOI that they need to let us know about before we get going? Hearing none, I just remind you all that we do have an obligation to keep our SOIs up to date. So if you should have any circumstance change, please remember to go into the wiki and change that and let us know. The next item that I have for us today is a proposed order of our work. I was unable to attend the last meeting, but in listening to the call and in reviewing the notes, it didn't seem that the team settled specifically on an order which we're going to tackle our work. We've got a lot of work, and I think we need to get into the work. So I've taken the liberty of taking the questions that we have been posed in our charter and sorting them based on comments from the last meeting, the discussion about string similarity may be impacted by the overarching issue of whether we go with a first-come, first-serve, or we do use rounds, as it were, in the next application. So there was some desire to put that towards a later point on our timeline. So based on all of that from the previous week's work, I would propose that we start out with objections, that we look at that substantive area, and then the order of the objections that we would look at, I would propose doing in the order listed here, simply because those are in order of, based on the statistics that staff provided us, the least to the most. So morality and public order received the least number of objections. Community received the most. I just figured we'd go after the low-hanging fruit first and start with that. Then after objections, we would move on to the applicant's freedom of expression. Follow that with community applications. I see I have a duplication here in my sheet. I apologize. I'll correct that on the wiki. Then we would move after community into string similarity and finally accountability. So does anyone have any thoughts to the contrary? Anyone have any suggestions? about reordering this, or are we content to adopt this as our work order and move on? See, Phil says no problems on this end. Is that with regard to the work order, Phil? Jeff says this makes sense. Cheryl's fine with it. Not hearing anything to the contrary, or seeing anyone raise their hand to speak, then I think we will... Phil's typing. Hang on. Yep, Phil's... Oh. Well, not hearing anything to the contrary, then I will declare that we have adopted this as our work order, and we'll move forward. The next issue to deal with, however, is the timeline of the work. I had started a timeline and then quickly realized that based on the allocated time in the master subsequent procedures list that the time that staff has estimated that we would need for each of these issues would require that we overlap some of these issues in order to get them all done by the end of April date that we have been given to aim for. Personally, my opinion is that we are a small, relatively speaking, a small group, and I feel like we would be spreading ourselves a bit thin to try and tackle more than one of these at the same time, the way we're doing with our work teams. My view is that our work should be done consecutively, so that we can give it the attention that it's due. But that may necessitate either increasing the frequency of our meetings, lengthening the duration of our calls beyond the 1 hour currently slotted, or risking going long in this procedure. So I would really appreciate some feedback from the group as to what our goals should be and how we should set out to do this so that we can come up with a timeline. Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. Hopefully I can be heard. I definitely support the view that we don't want to further split the group and have it working, you know, two parallel tracks. But also with the sort of progressive way in which the work goes and the notion of doing one reading and then a second reading as one works through the various issues, never deciding anything on just its first reading, it may be possible to think about, you know, starting one now and then sort of bringing in a second, not as a separate track, but as two things that the group is looking for. You know, notice very often in a meeting we'll discuss something for 30, 40 minutes and have run out on that one for now. We've got to go back and do more homework. We've got to research this. We have a request from staff, et cetera. So having a second topic that is also, you know, one beginning while the other one is ending, and doing that kind of overlap may help a little in terms of the schedule. So being very supportive of not going into parallel tracks, but doing a certain amount of fitting into the cyclical pattern may be something worth looking at. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thanks, Aubrey. And that is certainly a possibility to have something queued up, as it were, to start thinking on. Does anyone else have any thoughts or feedback on this? And I guess my question, I do have a question back either for Steve or Aubrey or Jeff, is that April 28th date that was in the master timeline, is that pretty firm? Have things adjusted overall that, or is that sort of a soft target? Aubrey, go ahead.
I think soft target is good for it. It's a first projection. And I think looking at, you know, as these groups schedule themselves, as we get, you know, more and more done, I think looking at the reality of that is part of this process. And I see Jeff has his hand up as well. So I will stop and give it to Jeff.
Yes.
Yeah, hi, this is Jeff Newman. And I just realized the phone that I'm talking from is one of the ones that has that number. It's the 442074218296 number. That's, for the record, that's ours. I'm a little hesitant to call it, a little more hesitant than Aubrey to call it a soft target, because we're 6-7 months out from it, and I'd rather not say at this point it's a soft target, thinking that we can extend it because it is kind of far away. I'd like us to shoot for that date, and then if we have to make some changes down the road, we'll do what we have to do. But it makes me a little uncomfortable to call it a soft target now, 7 months out. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I see that Phil has a comment that we should look into overlaps with work tracks and running topics and issues in parallel. Phil, are you trying to indicate there that you'd like us to be, for instance, for our work track 3 to be dealing with geo names the same time as work track 2 is dealing with the reserved name list? Is that? Okay. Well, we can work on that to the extent practical and leadership with Jeff and Aubrey's help, and see how we can sync there. Based on that discussion, then I will move forward this week with Jan and Aubrey and Jeff and staff in getting a timeline together that I will circulate. We'll try to circulate on the list, and plenty of time for people to comment on the list prior to the next scheduled meeting. And I think use of the list is going to become more important as we try to get a lot of work done in this time period that we've been given. Enough for timeline. Moving on to item 5, other business, prior to actually jumping into the work. Two things that I know of, and if anybody else has one, please speak up. But first, I'd like to see if we can get an update from either Jeff or Aubrey on the letter to back to the GNSO Council in response to the board's query about perhaps opening up subsequent rounds sooner rather than later, see where we are with that and if that should impact our work in this group at all. Jeff or Aubrey? Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman for the record. It was sent. Steve sent it, I believe. I might be getting my days. I think it was yesterday. Steve, you sent it to the council, and I know the council will be discussing it on their Thursday meeting. But I don't think, Steve, I don't think you got any further update, right?
Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve from staff. No, they have not necessarily responded to it, but you're correct in that the letter amongst all the other input received, the inquiry from the council, it will be discussed on the GSO council call on this upcoming Thursday.
Steve or Jeff, either one, can you, just for the benefit of those members that were not on the full team call last week and have not seen the letter, just a quick summary of what was sent back?
Sure, this is Jeff. Basically, the letter said that it obviously thanked them for sending us the letter and keeping us in the loop. But at this point in time, there is no consensus within the full group in either direction, either to in favor of bifurcating the process into two or multiple phases, or against, or there's no consensus on dealing with it or pushing it all off to one chunk. So it really just said that we don't have consensus within this group due to the short time and differing opinions, but that we will discuss this again in our meeting in Hyderabad in just a few weeks' time.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. The other item that I knew of that I wanted to throw out to the group for feedback and consideration is with regard to outreach to the SOs and ACs for input into our work areas in particular. And what I wanted to see if we could come to a consensus on sometime in the next 2 weeks is, do we want to do that now, do it early on so that we get the feedback earlier in the process and develop our questions based on just what we know at the outset of what our mandate is and what the questions we're to address are, or do we think that it would be better to wait until we're a little further along into the process, have delved into the subject matter areas a little bit further, and then could perhaps formulate the questions a little more in depth. That, of course, would then risk the feedback coming in later in the process, and depending on what that feedback is, it could mean doubling back and doing more work or not. What is the group's preference in that regard? Those that have done this before, what have you seen that has worked best? I think Jeff is typing. Steve, go ahead.
Thanks, Karen. This is Steve Chan from staff again. So I would just raise a concern and then I guess provide some context that generally working groups don't have a number of different work tracks like this. I think something we should remain cognizant of is that the communications that are the request for input that goes out to the SOs and ACs and the stakeholder groups and constituencies, you might want to consider making those coordinate with all the work tracks. So it might be it's good to talk about now, but it's probably also a topic for the full working group to make sure that we're coordinated. So the response rate to CC1, for instance, we got 3 responses. So if we send 4 separate responses to response or request from all the work tracks, we might have potentially even worse response rate. So just something to take into consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Just wanted to have the temperature of this group before we go back to the full group. Jeff says he would prefer having specific questions to send out. So I believe that would be later in the process. Phil would be inclined to wait and accumulate questions as well. Anyone feel strongly that we need to get this out now? Oh, I see Aubrey's raised her hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel strongly that we don't need to get this out now. That
okay.
Really we should, from all the teams, be coming up with material questions, questions that we really do need answers to. And I think after we've done some discussion on the items is really the time when we'll know what the questions are. Thanks.
Thank you. Based on that, then I will slide that towards the end of our proposed timeline, and we will coordinate with the other work tracks to their questions and their timing, and so that we can get a decent response rate. See what else is going on in the chat. Okay. So, moving on, the next item on our agenda is to actually jump into the work on the objections. The question that was posed in our charter is with regard to objections. Review rules around standing fees, objection consolidation, consistency of proceedings and outcomes. Review the functions and role of the independent objector. Consider oversight of process and appeal mechanisms. The couple of documents have been circulated and added to the wiki to help us in this discussion. The first one is I took the principles, the recommendations, and the implementation guidelines that were cited in our charter, and I've combined them in a single sheet reference for us to go through. And I assume that most of you had already read those and are familiar with those. The next is the document that staff shared with us, the two documents that staff shared with us based on the request from the last meeting for assistance from staff in mapping principles to objections and to application guidebook procedures from the past round so that we could understand the history and then use that as a basis for our deliberation. And so what I'd like to do now is to ask Steve if he would be so kind as to walk us through the document that he shared and give us some history and some understanding and context with regard to those and how those will help answer the questions from last time.
Thanks. Thanks, Karen. This is Steve Chan from staff. I will admit that was a bit of a surprise. I didn't know I was going to be explaining this right now. Can you specify which document you want to perhaps walk through?
The policy recommendation and implementation work on the applicant guidebook. The GNSO 2008 document that I understood was the showed the mapping of the principles.
This one?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
The document that's being shared in the room right now, let me unsync it real quick. This document was developed by staff, and you can actually see the date in here, it's 2008. And I'm not aware that it was actually publicly shared, but I've talked to the folks inside ICANN, and they don't mind that it's being shared. But I did want to make sure that that's known to at least understand the context of when this was developed. So the thought was that we could use this as a basis to help the work tracks and the working group overall to have a sense of how the recommendations from the 2007 panel report, how they were ultimately implemented within the applicant guidebook. And so this is essentially a mapping document that tries to accomplish that. And so what we need to be concerned with, I guess, is that because it was developed in 2008, that it's actually still up to date. And so it's something that perhaps staff needs to do, but it's something we all need to be aware of. I thought I had seen, Karen, that you had created one that was just about objections, maybe sort of an extract for this. Am I incorrect in that?
That is the document that I think you're referring to that I pulled together. That is the principles, the guidelines, and the implementation guidance. That was all referenced in the charter.
Okay.
Principles, recommendations, and guidance. If we want to go through that.
This one. Maybe not.
That.
Hopefully I can speak to it. So what I think Karen had done was all the ones that were the recommendations that were relevant, and you can actually see the recommendations that were deemed relevant to objections right here. She had maintained the graphics to help explain that that connection. What did you want to try to discuss specifically here? I would welcome Jeff and Aubrey to come in to help provide. They actually have more history in this than I do, so.
Yeah. Just trying to answer the questions from the last call, which I was not on. So, John, if you would like to jump in, please do. People wanted to understand the mapping of how the principles map to what was actually done. And so I was thinking that the document you provided was in response to that, so I wanted to make sure that people had the information that they needed.
Sure, thank you. This is
Hi, this is Jen speaking. That's correct. Last time, basically because that's the first time for me, basically that's a more administrative issue were raised and discussed, but I did raise one substantial issue, that's a principle. And according to the whole group's guidance, I realized that principle A, as you mentioned, that's like a right of free expression. So last time I touched this principle a little bit to say whether this principle could cover all the recommendation and implementation guidance, whether it's broad enough to cover all these questions. And because I wonder the rights of expression guidance may not be enough to cover all these questions, so I asked last time whether other principle need to be added in. So I think some participants mentioned other principles, for example, like first count, first serve, or any other principle. So in the some participants also recommend not any single principle can be mapped into so many different questions. So one of the tasks they suggest is to whether we can map different principles into different questions. So that's what I remember from the last time. So Karen, this time maybe because you raised a substantial question as like objection, maybe we can talk a little bit what the principle can be applied to this issue, or any other principle you want to raise or suggest to map into this issue.
Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. So the exercise really is that, you know, what we wanted to do is to make sure that the way that the objections were implemented, did they meet what the principles and or recommendations, did they meet that criteria that was approved by the GNSO? And if not, you know, what improvements could be made to meet that policy objective? So, for example, if you look at the morality and public order, which underwent huge amounts of discussion, initially was just based on the recommendation that says, that's up on the screen now, that says that strings must not be contrary to generally accepted legal norms relating to morality and public order that are recognized under international principles of law. And then a few examples were given. When ICANN staff went to implement that in the guidebook, two decisions were made. One was that they weren't going to make a judgment up front as to whether something violated this. In other words, it wasn't something that they were going to evaluate, but they were going to leave it all for the objection process. And then the second decision, obviously, was how to carry out that objection process. And Aubrey might have some better history on this particular one, but it did go through extensive discussion, both with the GNSO community, with the CROSS community, and then also with the GAC. And there were a number of compromises reached. This was one of those that was feared. There was fear that this would have to be used fairly often, but it turned out, obviously, Karen, as you said, it was only used, what, once? So anyway, that's just a little bit of background, and I don't know, Aubrey, if you have more to add on it, because I think if I remember correctly, you took kind of a leadership role in one of the groups that was implementing this particular objection.
Actually, I don't have much to add on what you already said on it. It was more feared than implemented. And, you know, it still is a reasonable principle to stand there. I don't know how we'd change it, but perhaps, you know, it does need to be looked at in terms of tightening the wording in some sense to go along with some of the other work that ICANN is doing on these issues. But I don't have anything to add at this point.
Does anyone else in the group have any view to whether or not we should look at that wording? Are people happy with the way it currently is? Anyone? What other, Aubrey, can you let us know what other work in specific you were thinking about so that we can make a note to track that and perhaps if there's movement there, bring something back up here?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of at the moment is the work in accountability and workstream 2 on the framework on human rights where many of these things would fall under. And so if something comes out there in terms of ICANN's framework for dealing with things, then it may be worth, you know, making sure that what we've got and as a recommendation fits with those notions. And they're not identical issues, but they do have a relation.
Okay. Great. I see in the chat, Phil is Phil, are you proposing that we add to the principles, the consumer choice and trust principle, in addition to A and G? Not sure, Phil, what that comment is regard to, but Jeff says that perhaps staff can come back to us on how morality and public order was used in the last round and what the result was. Steve, is that something that you can comment on based on the statistics you pulled together for us, or is that something that you would want to come back to us on later?
Thanks, Karen. This is Steve and from staff. Actually, I would probably ask Jeff to elaborate. Are you asking how recommendation 6 was implemented ultimately, or are you talking about statistics, or what aspect are you looking at, Jeff?
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. Karen had said that this was she thought it was used once in an objection, the morality and public order one. If it was, can you just come back with, you know, just a summary of what, when it was used, how it was used, and what the ultimate result was?
This is Steve again from staff. So I actually have the statistics in front of me. There were a total of 23 for limited public interest. Let me see if I can sort by that. So the Excel sheet that I prepared is actually on the wiki. I can add that to the AC room in a second.
Okay.
But sorry, I'll keep rambling for a second. So I think the outcomes were, there were 9 of the, I guess I said 23 or so, where the applicant prevailed. There were 9 where the request or where it was withdrawn, or the applicant had withdrawn, and then there were 4 where the objector had withdrawn, and there was only 1 where the objector prevailed. So ultimately, most had ended up with the applicant or the objector withdrawing, and then 10 that had gone to conclusion looks like the applicant prevailed in 9, and the objector prevailed in only 1. Hope that's helpful.
This is Aubrey. If I can jump in with
one more
thing. One of the things we may want to dredge up is there was a group that was formed during the AGB time frame. I think it was called Rec 6. If I remember correctly, and it was a group led by Chuck, and I believe it composed mostly of GNSO and GEC people, sort of talking through many of these issues. I was a member of that, wasn't in a leadership on it at all. I was a member of that, and it came up with some sort of soft conclusions, but I don't remember the details. So finding the final report, probably written in Chuck's hand, though it may have been written by someone in staff on that, and I think the name was the Rec 6 group, might be worth, okay, yes, thank you, Cheryl, and a couple ALEC in it as well, of course. Forgive me for forgetting. And so that may be worth digging up just to see if there's any content in that we feel needs further discussion. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Aubrey. Staff, is that something that you can help us find for review? Okay, thanks, Steve. see that in the chat. A few people are typing. Paul, it should have been. I think this printout is that they're showing right now is just a snapshot of one page. I believe the full Excel spreadsheet is in the wiki. Yes. Is there any? Did anyone else have any questions? Any about the 2008 mapping document that was prepared, and the recommendation 6 for morality and public order. Okay. Well, then we will briefly touch on the next objection, which was legal rights of others. And this one was, according to the statistics that Steve shared, there were 69 total objections based on legal rights, 58 of which the applicant prevailed in. So those did not seem to be successful. So the question to my mind is, one of the questions is, should we, you know, because it was not successful, does that impact its use in future rounds? Okay, Julie, is that the spreadsheet you put out the link to? Yeah. Okay. Try to find the document that my screen just disappeared. Sorry, folks. So the recommendation 3 reads, strings must not infringe the existing legal rights of others that are recognized or enforceable under generally accepted and internationally recognized principles of law. Examples of these legal rights that are internationally recognized include, but are not limited to, rights defined in the Paris Convention for Protection of Industry Property, in particular trademark rights, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, in particular freedom of expression. Does anyone want to comment on this particular objection basis, experience history, or experience being a participant in this process, and how it went last time? Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, Paul McGrady, for the record. So, how it went last time was that this principle was not really incorporated adequately into the guidebook. The legal rights objection was based upon an infringement analysis, which we all know infringement requires use, and it wasn't really clear how an applied for registry is a use of a trademark that normally triggers infringement elements in a claim. So the objection process found in the guidebook was simply a mismatch for the Paris principle that we were, I guess, trying to implement. Perhaps in all the excitement around multiple versions of the guidebook and everything else that the community was doing to get the 2012 round launched, that didn't get enough attention from people who would want to use such a objection process someday. But now we know that it is defective at the elemental level. And so I think this is one that we definitely need to put back on to actually implement the Paris principle on the protection of trademarks to make sure that in the next round that actually happens. Thanks.
Okay. Would your suggestion then, Paul? Oh, Jeff, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. So I agree in part with Paul, but I disagree in part as well. I think it was fairly effective in scaring anyone away from applying for something that they knew was someone else's brand. I think there are a couple examples where that didn't necessarily happen, or where there were some generic words that may also be someone's brand, and Paul's right, because you have to do an infringement analysis, it failed them. But I think in general, having that objection achieved its purpose, where let's say it was the McDonald's that we all know that applied for Dot McDonald's, and it's the the Macy's that we all know that applied for Macy's. And I think for the most part, there was a huge fear that competitors would be applying for the strings that they did not have a right to apply for, and that didn't happen. Where it failed in some cases, as Paul points out, I think was like, for example, some view that Ping, for example, which is a well-known golf, a trademark used in golf, they didn't prevail because of this infringement analysis you had to do. So I think we can make some fixes there. So I wouldn't call it completely defective, because I think it did achieve its purpose, that we didn't, with the exception of one that's still going on, that's Merck versus Merck. I think that's still a court case. But other than that, we did not find competitors applying for trademarks, and we didn't really find what a lot of the brands were afraid of. So I think there's definitely some improvements, but I think in general, I think it's there are some exceptions, as noted in the chat, but I think it worked it generally worked, but we can improve it.
Thanks, Jeff. Anyone else? I see some chat going on. Okay. Let's see. Caravan is an example of a generic or brand, and it prevailed as a brand. Yes. Very good. Well, we will, looking at the applicant guidebook, I would ask people to throw out what they think, where the improvement could be, where the tightening up could be, make things even better. So over the course of the next couple of weeks, as we prepare for our next meeting, since we're coming to the close of our hour here, take a look at the applicant guidebooks 3.2.2. and 3.2.2.3. Those are the two areas that we have touched on at a high level today, and we can talk about some specifics next time. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Jeff Newman for the record. I think I'm hoping I'm going to say this right. One thing we can try to do, or discuss actually, there was a question 18 that was asked of all applicants, which was a non-scored or an unscored part of the application, and was not carried forward into the registry agreement. We can discuss that. What it basically said is, what is the purpose of your TLD? And some took that question fairly seriously and wrote out the exact purpose of their agreement, and that in turn gave dispute panels, something to base their decisions on, but was never really incorporated into the final registry agreement, even if someone had said how they were going to use it. I think we need to, as part of one of our tasks, and also talking to Work Track 2, is talk about whether we think question 18, something like 18, should be mandatory, should be evaluated, and should be incorporated into the contract as something more binding. This way, if someone does apply for caravan, let's say, and they say it's going to be used in connection with the brand caravan, that they be restricted to use it with respect to caravan, so that we don't worry about, or actually the other way around, if someone says they're going to use it in the very generic sense, that they get held to that standard, that they cannot use it in any way that infringes on the brand, and it gets incorporated in the contract. I think that may help as one improvement. I don't know, Paul, if that helps with one of your issues or the ones you're thinking about, but I just found the whole loose way that this question 18 was asked, was unscored, and then not incorporated into the agreement, leads to fears of future infringement, even if there wasn't initial infringement.
Go ahead, Paul.
So, Paul here. Thanks, Jeff. Boy, that's a lot of different concepts all in one statement, right? So there is what is the estoppel effect of question 18 on applicants? What's the same effect on ICANN? How do we parse out what is a second-level infringing use of a top-level domain name? If somebody got .Ford because it was their last name, and then they did a second level cars.Ford, that might be infringing. But again, it's a second level issue. How would we monitor that? How would we enforce that after delegation? Should applicants be bound by their question 18 recommendations? What effects would that have on dot brands for transitioning to open in the event that they chose to do that? So I'm not sure that that answers any of my questions or concerns, but it certainly raises up all kinds of really thorny issues. I'm not opposed to diving into those thorny issues, but, you know, that is, if we're looking for a Pandora's box, there's one. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Let's see. Anybody else have anything to add to this before we wrap up this week's discussion?
Karen, this is Jan.
Yes.
Just one quick comment. When we're talking about legal rights, one typical legal right is trademark rights. So I think when the trademark holder can oppose a new string, but I just wonder, because here they mentioned that there is like a universal declaration of human rights and international convention on civil and political rights. I just don't know who is the right holder of those international principles. So who will be responsible to stand up to oppose any new string? That's one my question.
One thing we can do, John, is go back and in the spreadsheet that Steve provided us on the second tab are the actual objections. So it's you can click through to actually get to the objections and see what the grounds were and what they were decided on. So we can go back and do a survey of were all of the legal objections that were raised, were they based on trademark, or did any come through from other people standing up for other legal rights? But throw it back out to those that were involved in participating when the guidebook was brought together. Was does anyone have, in response to John's question, an answer as to who the rights holders were projected to be for other legal rights objections beyond trademark? Jeff Aubrey?
This is Jeff. It was only interpreted in this last round as trademark rights.
Okay.
But I believe it could have been based on, I don't want to make a statement. I was going to say it might have been also common law trademarks, but I have to double check. You might have had that a registered trademark, but I believe it was only trademarked rights.
Okay. Well, we will look back into that.
I think the trademark is a typical legal right, but UDHR and the ICCPR, those kind of political rights, right? Do we need to differentiate these two types of rights, or we just put them together to see those couple of things are all belonging to like legal rights? I think they are very different.
Jeff, go ahead. Your hand. Is that an old hand?
Hi, Karen. This is Crescent. I work with Jeff. Jeff just left the room, so that wasn't Jeff's hand.
Is that your hand, or is that just old?
No, I think that must be an old hand.
Okay. All right, then. Well, we are over. We are 2 minutes over our hour. Greg has just put into the chat that UDHR is not a legal right. So we'll pick that up with the discussion of what the UDHR is and why it was referenced here. Next time, Aubrey has put into the chat for everyone the Rec 6 documents for background and history, so I'd encourage you to pull those down and review those, and we will pick those up on our next call, which staff will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it is scheduled for October 11th at 2000 UTC. So for that, thank you everybody for participating, and have a great rest of the week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.